Welcome to a place where two HR professionals, who happen to be twins, by the way, have shop talk about HR, careers, and all the things you want to say at work but won't. The Career Salon is a place to relax, a place to learn, and a place to be yourself.
This is a judgment-free zone where we put it all on the table to become better. We learn many things from our guests and hope you grab a couple of things to take with you as well. We spend most of our time at work, so let's talk about what that means. Come on in. The salon is open.
We are super excited to be welcoming Sheena Hamilton to this episode of the Career Salon Podcast with the HR Twins. Court is in session. Sheena serves as city councilor for the city of St. Louis, overseeing its civil law department, which houses two deputy city councilors, 38 attorneys, and 20 support staff. Wow. Prior to her service with the city, she was practicing law as an equity partner, where she served as client manager for multiple Fortune 100 companies and government or quasi-government offices, managing litigation, investigations, budgets, staffing, and compliance. Sheena has a long list of accolades. To name a few, she's most recently concluded a three-year term on the Board of Governors for the American Bar Association in August 2021 and currently serves as a Missouri Bar Delegate to the ABA House of Delegates. She regularly speaks and writes on legal issues, and she's an author of more than 20 articles and publications. She has also been quoted as an authority on legal matters by the New York Times, Law 360, and the Society of Human Resource Management. She was also recognized in 2021 as St. Louis Business Journal's 40 Under 40. Please welcome Sheena to the salon. Hey, 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 welcome to the Career Salon Podcast with the HR Twins. We are so glad that you could join us for this episode, and we're in season 7. Woo-hoo! How about that? Woohoo! Look, and it took us all this time. I guess we thought, you know, we watched Judge Judy and Law and Order, all of them, and we thought, you know, we had a little legal savvy. You know, but you know, we don't. We actually have a guest today, special guest, who is an actual attorney that actually went to school. So let's welcome to the salon, Sheena Hamilton. Woo!
Are you ready?
Thank you so much, Sheena, for joining us. We want our audience to get to know you first before we start digging in on the questions. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am the city councilor for the city of St. Louis. And so right now I run a 70 plus person little civil law department for the city of St. Louis. And we practice all kinds of law. Including employment law, but we do it for all of the elected and appointed officials, all of the boards and commissions, the airport, the police department. I could go on and on. Just the city of itself. I'm sort of the general counsel for the city of St. Louis.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's a relatively new role for me. I've been in it less than a year with the election of our new mayor. And before that, I was an equity partner at Dow Bennett, where I practiced employment law almost exclusively, and before that at another big firm, and before that I clerked for a federal judge after coming out of law school. So I've been practicing for a while now. I came out of law school in 2010 and that's what I've done since then.
Wow. I love it. So many good things and good opportunities that you have had. And just for our audience, we're not going to ask Sheena specific questions because we know most of the things she does is confidential. Hello. So we're just going to ask her general questions about being an attorney and, you know, and why she loves it. So that's my first question is, what made you want to be an attorney? Like, what is it, a childhood dream, or did you just figure right before you went to college?
So I would probably say it's some sort of subliminal messaging from my mother. I started out with working with lawyers and getting to know lawyers in a program called Law Explorers in the 5th and 6th grade. And it's a program that teaches you about the law and the judiciary and things like that. And at the end of the year, we have this big show at the end for the parents at the final trial. And the first year I was the lawyer, and the second year I was the judge. And the gentleman who ran that program also ran a law firm, and he became sort of a mentor, took me under his wing, and I worked at his law firm as first a court runner and then a legal secretary when I was in college at Tennessee State University.
That's awesome. Did y'all hear that? Tennessee State University. We know some amazing people, alumni, that traveled through those streets of campus at Tennessee State University. That's awesome. Typically, you know, we find in our field of HR, which I know you've touched on HR a little bit, Sheena, in your career, but people just like fall into the career of HR, and they never really, you know, from a little child think of, oh, when I grew up, I'm going to be in HR. So it's awesome that you had that exposure and that you have continued on in that path and still really enjoy what you're doing. And I love how in your role and how you talk about your career, you've kind of morphed into different areas of law and experience, being it from civil and just corporate and all those different things. Have you found that your path has been pretty, okay, I found something I want to do outside of what I was doing previously and I just want to go for that? How have you kind of found the transitions between your roles? Have you found it challenging or pretty easy?
Well, I'll tell you, everything that I ever wanted to do for myself, every big plan that I set into motion, none of that ever really worked. Most of the time I would be like, I want to do this and I want to be that, and this is kind of what direction I'm going in or what job I'm applying for or whatever the case may be. And oftentimes that did not work out, almost never. Really, what has happened over the course of my career, I've been really blessed with people who know better and have been around the block and have done this before. And they kind of tap you on the shoulder and say, I think this will be a good opportunity for you, or I would like to see you try this, or go here or go there or whatever the case may be. And I may even be resistant to that opportunity to start with, but eventually came into those opportunities by getting really ideas from mentors and guidance from people who know better in the practice. So it's been interesting because everything that I kind of had planned for my career, something different has happened, but I'm very happy with where I have landed, right?
Awesome. You also talked about, sorry, Carla, I know she was going in for the question, but I do have a follow-up to you because you've mentioned mentorship kind of twice already in regards to kind of how you've ascended in your career. And I know a lot of people ask me specifically, like, how do you get a mentor and things like that? So in your career, Sheena, how have you found or identified mentors, or even how have they found you to start that mentorship relationship?
Yeah. So the practice of law started out without law school. It started out as an apprenticeship. And we very much operate that way nowadays as well. You do have to go to law school. You do have to take a bar exam. Those things teach you just enough to be dangerous. And unless you learn the practice from another lawyer who's really good at it, then you really only know enough to be dangerous, right? So for me, the first mentor that I got in the law, like I said, was the guy that I got from the program. And I think when I got to St. Louis, which I went to St. Louis University for law school, I was paired with a mentor through the Black Law Student Association and the Mound City Bar Association, which are Black lawyers in town. And he really introduced me to the practice of law in St. Louis and the legal community here. And I think the way that you get a mentor to invest in you, because you'll get introduced to many mentors or many potential mentors, right, over the course of your career or your education even. And I think the way that you get a mentor to invest in you is if you invest in that relationship and you show up excellent every time, right? Yes. So every time my mentor asked me to be someplace, to go to a lunch, to a dinner, to a whatever, observe his courtroom. His name was Donald McClellan, rest his soul. And he was the presiding judge in St. Louis City. And whenever he said, you know, we're going to have something interesting happen in court, you know, show up here, I showed up early, watch what was going on, stayed till the end. You know, we went to a dinner. I showed up with the appropriate attire on and, you know, did all of the things and showed up on time. And whenever he asked me to volunteer for something for our Black Bar Association here, that's our professional lawyer organization in town, I always tried to make sure that that event or that program went off without a hitch. And yes. That's, I think, how you get people to invest in you is that you make them look good.
Yeah. And the running theme I continue to hear, and we talk about it a lot with like our clients, is personal brand as well. And we tell people that it's really important that your personal brand represents who you are, what you believe in. So showing up early and doing the right things and showing up excellent, those are all important themes. And I think it's really important with the personal branding that, you know, even in the space of being an attorney, it's not enough just to know the law and pass the bar. You also have a brand that you're building on how to be an excellent attorney and have that reputation. Is it any tips that you can, additional tips that you can give our audience in terms of when they're looking at their personal brand in terms of, you know, employment or in their entrepreneurship, or if they work for an employer, what are some important things that you see that they should shine a light on?
That gentleman that I was just talking about, Judge Donald McClellan, he also told me very early on, because he was a judge and I would hang out with a lot of people who were judges, because he introduced me to legal community, which means he introduced me to several judges. And so people would ask me all the time, you want to be a judge? You want to do this? Where do you want to land in this career? And so on and so forth. And that at that time, I was a law student. So if I had made any prediction at that time, doing what I do now, I could have never imagined, right? So I would have been wrong. And two things that he told me was, your legal career is 40 years long. You know, when people ask you what you want to do on your final day of your legal career, tell them, I don't have to decide right now and you can't make me. And take it as it comes, right? And then he said, the other thing that he told me was, find someone who has the sort of law practice that you want. See what that person did to get that sort of law practice and take the good and leave the bad, right? And so I think that has also helped me to the earlier question that Camille was asking about developing mentorship relationships. That's another thing that has helped me develop mentorship relationships. I look at people who are the kind of lawyer that I want to be and how they got to that place. And I did that for a long time. I still do that to this day. I think I'll do it for my entire career is, you know, look at people who have arrived, to, for lack of a better word, and see how they came to that place.
Good. I like that. And very wise words from your mentor. So I want to transition into kind of helping our audience, even if they're employees, they may not be in a leadership position. A lot of things that I found across my career is, you know, and I know you may not currently practice employment law specifically, but you have dabbled in that in your career. A lot of employees don't know their rights as an employee. And I try to advocate for those employees, you know, when I'm in the room and things like that, try to advocate for both manager and employees. I want everybody to get along. But what are like some of the things that you have seen over your career that employees can do better, a better job of keeping themselves equipped to know their rights and all of those things?
Well, all of that information is given to you or made available to you, right? Yeah. So oftentimes, and I'll be honest, and I still practice employment law, and in doing so, I'm almost exclusively on the management side. And so a lot of times I'm defending a lawsuit that is brought against a company or a manager or both by an employee, or I'm bringing a lawsuit against an employee for something like relocation costs. You know, you've moved to St. Louis from New York and you've sworn, you know, hand to God that you were going to stay here. And we spent tens of thousands of dollars, you know, moving you and your family here. And then you get here and you're like, I don't really like St. Louis. And you want to go back to New York. And I'm like, that's fine. But you need to run me my money, though. You know what I mean? Or, you know, I have represented client-based businesses where we have to, you know, when you transition to a new employer, make sure that you're abiding by your agreements with the employer about not taking clients with you. So I'm usually on the management side. What I do know is that I'll depose plaintiffs a lot of times in litigation, or employees in litigation a lot of times, and I'll ask them, did you know about this policy? And they don't. And it's the policy that they signed, right?
Right.
And so I'm like, do you recognize this signature? This is your signature. So, I mean, a lot of the rules are given to you. And to the extent that they're not, you can always ask for them. And, you know, I would, in my experience, because sometimes I even represent managers when they're being, you know, kind of up against their employer. So I'm working as, for example, a Title IX situation or something like that. I might be representing an educator who is going through the system with their university system, right? I might be acting as their advocate. And so I say, do you know the rule about this or whether we're allowed to do that? And they say no, and it's not in the rules. And so I say, you know, go ahead and get that information from your supervisor or the person who's over the proceeding or even HR, right? And I ask them to get it in writing, right? So, you know, the rules and the regulations and the policies, the past practices, all of those things will be made available to you or should be made available to you. Employers shouldn't be, you know, hiding the ball. And many times they aren't. Many times it's right there and you've signed it. So just taking the time to look over things and research things and ask for information that you don't have at your fingertips, which a lot of it you do. Now employers have these intranets and things like
yeah.
that. They have a rule about everything. So,
Right. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, Anchor. Okay, we're back from our break. And I do have a question for Sheena in regards to employees. Well, not necessarily employees, it's folks in the HR field. I talk to a lot of folks and they're like, oh my gosh, I love HR so much. And what I'm finding is that I have more of an affinity towards employment law. And that's what I'm really interested in versus continuing my career in human resources. So what are some tips or advisement you would give people who are considering law school to prep be, you know, employment lawyer, employment attorneys, you know, making that transition between jobs?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, after, you know, I told you about me going to work when I was at Tennessee State in the summertime for that lawyer from my hometown. After law school, I moved to Dallas, Texas, and I worked for American Airlines. And there I started off in employer relations. And I started off working directly for the employer relations manager, which is an HR function. And I was there through one of the collective bargaining agreements being negotiated. And eventually, before I left American Airlines, I became a paralegal to the corporate secretary. But when I was in HR, you know, you learn a lot about company culture and all of those things. And you really do get interested. Now, I was already interested a lot, but you get interested in the rules, the regulations, the fine print, all of that stuff. And it does sort of lend itself to employment law. And actually, because I worked eventually for the corporate secretary at American Airlines, I thought I wanted to go to law school to be a corporate lawyer. And it so happened that, you know, my transcript spoke differently, right? I ended up with several moot court titles and all these practical skills classes and different things like that that said I should be a courtroom lawyer instead of a transactional lawyer. But employment law always fascinated me. And I think one of the things to remember as you transition is that you can't really be a neutral, right? In employment, in HR, you can pretend to be a neutral a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
And you want to, and HR people have such big hearts. It is a big heart for everything and everybody. You feel for the manager, you feel for the employee.
Yes.
You have to identify with people in that way when you are in HR in order to be successful and build those relationships, right? But when you're a lawyer, you're an advocate and you got to pick a side. And in the legal field, you know, there's opposite sides of what we call the V in a case, right? So someone's got to win and someone's got to lose, and you have to make the best case for your client, right? And so I've noticed in, because a lot of what I do is what I did, and I still do employment law, and so it's a lot of what I do still now, but not quite as much, is coach managers on how to manage. And a lot of times you have to ask, every time somebody comes to me and says, can I fire so-and-so, I say, tell me what you've done to manage that employee. Right.
Right.
How have you tried to how have you managed that employee? Have you tried to level set with them? Have you documented? Have you put in your best effort as a manager? And if you get to the place that you put in your best effort as a manager and you still feel like you need to let that employee go, then even after that, we got to look at how you've treated other employees. Right. Because the main question in employment law is always, what is the precedent, right? What have you done mm-hmm. with other employees? And there's so often where you have somebody like a Carla or a Camille who is an excellent employee, right? Mm-hmm. And they do great work. They do all their work. They show up to work. And so you give them a break every once in a while, right? Well, that's going to be the case that this other employee who is not that great is looking at. Well, why can't you do for me what you did for Carla? Well, because you're not Carla, but that's not how the law works, right? You know what I mean? The law looks at everybody just the same. So I think that's kind of the lens that you have to look through is you as an employment lawyer are an advocate for a particular side, whether it's the management side or whether it's the employee side. And that's the position you have to take, and you have to put your client in the best position possible. Because when people come to me and say, is that legal? The question really that juries and judges hold you to is not always whether it's legal. It's whether you are using best practices, right? Whether you're the people in the jury are going to ask, is this an employer I would like to work for, right? And so sometimes you have to stomach a little bit more than you typically would, or the rules even allow, or the law even allows, to make sure that you're on your best footing and being your best manager or your best employee, right? Because on the other side of that coin, the jury is going to ask, if there are people who are in management, is this the type of employee that I would want to work for me, right? And so that's what I would say is the distinction, is that heart that you have, that big HR heart that you have for everybody in every situation. You got to kind of compartmentalize a little bit.
Yeah, I have a question, because so many things came out of what you just said. And I feel like in what I've seen from the outside looking in, you know, with friends and things like that, sometimes there's a like contentious relationship between like counsel for the company or the organization and HR. Because like you say, HR has like sometimes is on the fence, and with legal, you can't really be on the fence. It's like either you have evidence and demonstrated acts or documentation, or you don't. Like, it's no in between. And HR sometimes can be like very in between. So what can, we have a lot of HR colleagues out there listening to our podcast. How can human resources be a better partner to general counsel for the orgs that they work in your opinion?
Absolutely. I think the main thing that any manager or any HR professional can do to assist an attorney who is trying to get you over the finish line at the end of the day is look for comparators. Every time you have a situation, every time you have a scenario, you could be 6 months on the job. You go to the person who's 9 years on a job and you say, has this ever happened before? And in that circumstance, what did we do? What sort of documents did we have? What sort of leeway did we give? Has anything changed in the rules since that time? Right? And that's kind of where you want to go, is kind of what you need to level set and see what has happened over the past. Or once you make a decision, right, you communicate that to the management team. Because the number one, I think, issue that people have in management is not that there aren't rules, it's that they don't know the rules, right? Just like the employees, the managers don't have the issue that they don't know the policies, they don't know how to implement discipline, or there aren't those policies. It's just that they maybe weren't trained on those policies, maybe they don't know the intricacies, maybe they don't take the time to reach out to Carla and Camille about how they should move forward with those disciplinary actions, right? Because they don't think they have the time. Or you know, you can't go to sleep and dream the things that people do at work. And people spend right. more times with their coworkers sometimes mm-hmm. than with their families. And so some emotion gets involved sometimes, right? So they're like, you're fired, right? It's just right. a quick emotional reaction, right? Instead of lining up the facts and looking at the comparators. And so to me, the best thing that you can do to help a lawyer who is going to ultimately have to defend what HR or what the company does is make sure that you're looking at the facts, that you're taking time to breathe, you're looking at comparators. That's the main thing.
Love that. Great advice. And I swear, every podcast episode, our guests give us something to think about. It's really a learning opportunity for us to have this podcast. So thank you so much for that. I'm going to listen to this again, of course, and get my... you know, my brain in focus in remembrance of these things.
One thing that I wanted to ask you, so you've been practicing for quite a while now. So what has been the biggest lesson you yourself have learned in your career so far?
Yeah. So the lesson that I've learned is that you treat every case like a Supreme Court case. There are no small cases. There are no big cases. You have to show up excellent like every time. Right. I had a case where it was like I was new and I had just gotten into private practice. So I had been working for a judge for a couple of years out of law school. And then I went to a firm, was working in private practice. And it was a small claims case that I was given about a person who wasn't paying their bills to one of our clients. And she actually filed a lawsuit against the company. For these, you know, saying you cut off my service, even though I wasn't paying my bills. And she was claiming, and it came to me as the employment lawyer because she was claiming lost wages because her home daycare was not able to operate because this service had been cut off. So I was able to tell from the documents that she didn't pay her bills, you know, blah, blah, blah. She was properly cut off. Right. Well, I got there to small claims court and this lady made up this. I mean, it was just fantasy stories, right? It was like nothing you'd ever seen. And so at small claims court, I think the judge knew, right? He could see the documents, but he could tell what her story was. And I didn't have any witnesses with me. All I had was documents, right? Because I thought this is open and shut, right, judge?
Right.
And so he ended up splitting the baby, saying, here's the amount in dispute, you know, so now you owe her this much and you don't owe her the, you know, half of that because she owes these unpaid bills. Well, I came back and told my client, like, I can't believe it. This person owes us all this money and now we owe her, you know, money. So I obviously, because the way you keep a perfect record, right, is you just appeal everything, right? So, I appealed that loss, right? And I came back with my witnesses and my documents and all of the things, right? And that really taught me a lesson. It taught me that you can't treat anything, you know, like this is going to be easy. This is going to be a cakewalk because you never know what the other side is going to do. Someone has to win and someone has to lose. So you always treat every case like a Supreme Court case.
Good advice. It seems like, oh my gosh, just seems like you're from that, just even that little story that your work is very eventful. Some people, yeah, some people, when law immediately comes to mind, they're like, oh, that's boring. It's this and that. But no, I mean, I see from you and just talking to other, you know, friends, family that are attorneys that, no, it could be very interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. At that hearing, like I ended up doing more research and finding more documents. And the woman, not only did I get the verdict reversed, but she ended up getting arrested at that hearing. Yeah. There's never a dull moment in the practice of law. There has not been for me. I'll say that.
Wow.
Yeah. Same here in HR. Never.
Yeah, that's true.
The strangeness of human beings.
And a lot of what you said is like, you would think that read your documents. If there's a policy, read stuff before you sign it. It's so like shocking to me that we are living in 2022. Well, a lot of things are shocking about the age we're living in, but just the simple fact that people don't read, they don't know their rights, even though they're, you know, right in front of their face and they're going to a job every day and they kind of want to do what they want to do, but they forget that there's policies in place.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not important until it is. And then usually when it is, it's too late. Something's happened. And yeah.
Well, the idea that you are negotiating a contract with a competitor and you haven't thought back, did I sign a non-compete? That baffles me, right? But there has been a number of times where I've notified people of their non-compete and they're like, oh, I can't. And I'm like, you did.
Wow. Well, we're wrapping up our podcast. This has been great. I've learned a lot and I hope our audience have gotten a lot of takeaways from this conversation. So, Sheena, tell our audience where they can connect with you if they wanted to say, hey, heard you on the podcast. You did great.
Yeah, I am on LinkedIn and it's just Sheena Hamilton and I'm in St. Louis and my title is city councilor. So if you type in any of those things or the combination of those things, you'll find me.
Right. Just Google Sheena, okay? Because
In the LinkedIn.
Yes. But I'm sure some of our audience will love to say, hey, Sheena, like, you're so awesome. So thank you to our audience for continuously supporting the Career Salon Podcast with the HR Twins. Thank you to our guest, Sheena Hamilton, for taking time out of your very busy schedule to get with us. So I want to say we look forward to hearing more from you and just you ascending to higher heights in your career. And we will catch our audience on the next episode of the Career Salon Podcast. Thank you.
We would like to take this time to thank our sponsor, Black in HR. Black in HR gives its members a growing network of like-minded professionals to connect with for jobs, coaching, courses, mixers, and events. Black in HR was founded in 2017 and has grown into a powerhouse for skilled Black professionals around the world. Want to know more? Want to do more? You're not in HR? That's okay. They have the collective and elite membership opportunities. The membership program is an inclusive space and encourages diverse professionals to network, share jobs, and grow the platform. The community is made up of talented, diverse professionals from every field. Want to know more? Visit TheBlackInHR.com. This is Carla, the HR expert.
And this is Camille, the recruiting expert.
And we're the HR twins. You just finished an episode of the Career Salon Podcast.
Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at The Career Salon. And don't forget to subscribe and follow on all podcast platforms for upcoming episodes.